Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Platinum Coaching Call here for June. I was going to say May, but it's already June 2018. It's great to be here with you guys. As usual, I'm going to start with questions that were pre-submitted. We had only one, so we'll start there, but just a reminder that you can ask a question by dialing star 2 on your telephone keypad, star 2. That will raise your hand. If you're on the web call, so you're just not using a phone, you're just using your computer, there should be a raise hand icon there. And I'll let you know, if I don't see any raised hands, I will let you guys know, because sometimes that option's a little tricky, and sometimes you'll click on the icon, but it doesn't register on my end, or at least I don't see it. So if you see that, please let me know by typing in, submit your question to Ed, you know, in that box, just letting me know, hey, you know, I got my hand raised. And we've also made a chat option available. You'll see that there's a chat box. In fact, I just joined the chat. Let me just type it in. Here's where you can chat with me. And what I'd love to do is I'd love to hear from you in the chat box about any recent wins that you've had over the past few weeks. And a win, the way I think of a win, is just anything that's positive, anything that makes you feel good, giving you encouragement or motivation. It doesn't have to be a new client. It doesn't have to be any kind of, you know, huge windfall. It could be, hey, I got a positive response from a client that sounds really good, or I am sitting down tomorrow to talk with a great prospect, or I had this breakthrough or this insight. So just type in anything that you would consider a win in the chat box. I'd love to see some of those here, and we'll go through that. So let's start with a question that was pre-submitted, and excuse me, this came from Mia, and it's pretty long, so let me just kind of summarize it. But Mia is telling me that she is a master mechanic turned automotive content writer / copywriter. She says, I have plenty of clients, so many that I end up working 7 days a week. My problem is pricing. I have no idea what to charge, and I think I'm working for too little. Any tips on how to get an idea of appropriate rates? And then she went on to say that you know, she's got a bachelor's degree in advanced automotive systems. She's also currently an adjunct college auto instructor. So she's got some great credentials. This is not someone who has a passing interest in cars, where that's a kind of a passion for them, but they don't really have any credentials there. We're talking about someone, this is a bit unusual, especially in these types of markets, where there's obviously a passion, but there are some very clear, tangible credentials there as well. She's also very, very busy, so that's a good thing. But what I'm seeing right away is that it sounds like you're absolutely charging too little. I mean, if you're working that hard 7 days a week and you're not entering close to what you need. So here's what I would encourage you to do, Mia. In fact, this is something I believe everyone should do, and it doesn't require any kind of advanced math. But I would encourage everybody to make a quick calculation of what they've been earning for the past 3 to 6 months. If you have that kind of history, if you got 6 months, if you can grab that, that's ideal. But even if you just have the past 3 months, that will work. I like a longer time span, because it will give you a better average, including, you know, bad months, better months, average months, etc. But 3 months will do. And then what I want you to do is I want you to do your best at calculating how many hours you put into your business on a weekly basis. Just your best guess, and you may need to think about that a little bit, but the way I like to say, if you don't track your time, if you just know generally you start at 8 and stop around 5, then that will give you an idea, right? So you know you got 9 hours a day, roughly 5 days a week, so that's about 45 hours, give or take, some weeks you spent. So let's say that many weeks you'll take a Friday off, and, you know, maybe you want to bring it down to 40. But figure that and then multiply that by 4. So we want apples to apples. We want your average income over the past 6 months, ideally, along with the average number of hours you work in your business over the course of a month. By the way, when I say work in your business, I think this is pretty self-explanatory, but just to make it clear, we're talking about total time, not just billable time. So if that 9 hour a day typically has 2 hours where you're running errands, going to the gym, that kind of thing, I would subtract those so you get a more accurate number. The bottom line is I want you to figure out what your internal hourly rate is, roughly. And again, it doesn't have to be extremely scientific, just kind of come up with a quick calculation there. And in most cases, I find people are horrified by what they see. I see a ton of situations where people are working, writers are working, and freelancers in general for 10, 8, 5, sometimes $3 an hour. And these are seasoned people. These are not newbies. In many cases, these are people who have been at this for several years, and they're in that situation. I mean, they're making less than minimum wage. And that's a huge wake-up call. So that I think is, you know, you need clarity. I think it's important. And if you're wondering, oh, gosh, you know, do I really want to do that? Is it going to be depressing? You know what? You really need to do it because it's a huge wake-up call. Might not be as bad as you think. It might be worse than you think. Either way, it's extremely helpful to figure out where do I stand right now. What I suspect is going on with Mia is that she's undercharging. The fact that she's really busy, has got plenty of clients, plenty of work, and she's working 7 days a week tells me that she's not charging enough. So a couple of ideas would be start, figure out what your internal hourly rate is. That's going to give you the motivation you need and the confidence you need to bring your fees up. The second thing I would do is I would start raising my fees for new clients, new prospects. Here's the thing, that's going to be your easiest opportunity. New prospects don't know what you charge. So the next prospect that you come across, quote 20% higher than you have been quoting for that same type of project. So whatever the number you would normally have quoted, before you put it out there, tack on another 20%. In most of these cases, what I have found is that your prospect is going to say yes. They're going to move forward with you. And not only is, I find there's two emotions tied to that kind of outcome. One is, fantastic, I just made 20% more. And the other one is this a bit of anger that, gosh, I've been undercharging so much all this time. So your biggest opportunity is going to be with new prospects. And then I want you to take a look at the rest of your clients, your current clients or even dormant clients who kind of come and go, and figure out, okay, which ones do I really want to keep here? I don't want you to do anything drastic. I'm not saying you need to fire your clients, but I need you to take a closer look at who you want to keep and who is, I hate to use the word expendable, but who would you be willing to let go of? When I've done this in the past, I've always identified at least one that I've kept because I just couldn't figure out a way to let them know, or I just felt bad, or I just didn't know, you know, how to go about it. And that's going to be an easier target. You can't bring in better clients until you make room for them. And the best way to make room for them is just to get rid of the ones who just aren't a good fit. And I'm telling you, if they're not a good fit for you, you're not a good fit for them. It goes both ways. So with existing clients, my suggestion is to give them a notice that, you know, in 90 days, your fees are going to go up by a certain percentage. If there's one thing you do for them, then it's fine just to say, hey, you know, instead of 150 a post, they're going to go up to 200 a post. Give them a grandfather period, a grace period. Grace period would be more appropriate. I don't know, grandfather, you're not going to grandfather anybody in. So it's going to be a grace period of 90 days, and let them know that, you know, you've held these fees steady, but you can't continue. You know, you're starting to land work at much higher rates. You value them. You want to honor the fact that, you know, they're a great client, but you can't continue to charge, you know, in this case, 150. And what will happen is you might get some pushback. I think you'll be surprised at how many will agree to it. And the ones who just absolutely aren't willing to do it, then you need to be willing to let go where appropriate. I think it's fine if you want to phase that in instead of making an announcement to everybody. If you want to batch process that that effort, I think it's absolutely fine. And I would start at the bottom of the list with the ones that you know you're willing to let go of sooner than later. So those are two things I would absolutely do. But start with calculating your rough internal hourly rate. It doesn't matter, again, if you quote fixed project, fixed fee, if you quote hourly. You don't have to quote hourly to do this. You just need to really find out what you're earning on average per hour for your business. It all starts there. So, so that would be my biggest thing, and I think it's for anybody here on the call, that's definitely going to apply. All right, so again, guys, star two on your telephone keypad to raise your hand, or you can submit a question through the submit a question field there. Right now, it's an open floor. I don't see any raised hands, so if you've raised your hand, I'm not seeing you. Just try star two, or you can submit a question. Or just let me know in the chat box there on the call page what's new, what's good, any recent wins you want to share with me in the group. All right, who's going to be the brave soul who's going to break the ice? I haven't gotten any brave souls yet. Ah, here we go. Hey, Liz, out in New Mexico, what's going on?
Well, hey, Ed, since you're all there, you're there all alone, I decided, I've better check in with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, well, you know a lot of this. But since you said, we're open to sharing, I just want to encourage everybody on the call to consider going to an industry trade show.
Yes.
Which I did last week. And I have so many possibilities coming out of that I'm not sure I'm going to be able to take them on. It's just great. So just want to put that out there. Consider going to an industry trade show. It is well worth it.
That is sage advice. And I saw your recap about everything, all the different possibilities and all the different things you walked away or that came out of that event. I'm curious if you could tell us, because many people are in industries where there's so many show possibilities, conference possibilities. How do you make that decision? How do you narrow it down to a list of, let's just say, two or three shows to seriously consider? Because I think once you narrow it down to that, it's easier to make a decision based on timing and cost. But it's overwhelming. I know I've been on that side. And it's like, I don't even know where to start. So what would you suggest?
Well, I would look at who are the possible people who will be attending, and are those the kind of people that you want to work with? I know when I've gone to, I went to a trade show that was really kind of a plain vanilla group of people. I didn't get very many leads, but the last one I went to was really my tribe and really the kind of people that I want to work with. And the other thing that I looked at is who are the software vendors who will be there? Are there software vendors that you might like to write for that look like they have the deep pockets to be able to afford a freelance writer? Not all software vendors really have much money to be able to pay a freelancer much more than poverty wages. So that's something to look at. Another thing that I think helped with the last one I went to is just the size. I went to one trade show that was had 5,000 people there, and it was just really overwhelming to try to make connections with people. It was really difficult to stand out and to even just find people. The last one I went to was about 1,500 people, so that was much smaller. It was much easier to find people, much easier to have conversations, and that really helped a lot.
Now, I'm curious, Liz, with one quick event, sorry to interrupt, but when prospects, vendors, with vendors is very visible, right? But how can you tell what kind of people are going to be attending who are not necessarily vendors?
I would look at the speakers, and this really is my next point. Look at who is going to be speaking, because usually they'll publish that well in advance. And so if those are the thought leaders that you really enjoy reading, you listen to their podcasts, you've bought their books, if those are the kind of people that you want to meet, and believe me, you will have the opportunity to meet them in person, that can give you a good idea of the kinds of people who will be there. So, at this last event, I could tell that it was going to be a little more edgy, a little more millennial focused. And so that was what really attracted me. Now, at the big conference I went to, because it was such a big conference, there were a lot of international superstars, people from all over the world. And that was, it was worth going to that big conference just to have the opportunity to meet them, which was really cool. One little win that I got out of that was one of the speakers I met wrote a book, and he sent a pre-press version of it to me as a PDF and asked for comments and a little quick blurb on it. So I gave him a few little notes, some typos I found, places to strengthen it, plus a blurb. And yesterday when I went to the landing page for that book, my blurb and my picture and what I do were there. So that was huge.
That is. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we're talking, sounds like it's really kind of, you got to play a bit of a detective game, right? You got to do some detective work and look at, it sounds like, look at the speakers and the topics. And through a little bit of deduction, you can then determine, okay, based on the speakers and the topics, would my audience be attracted to that? Does that sound like the kind of topics and speakers that my audience would be attracted to? Because that will show you who they're going to attract. The vendors look to see who's going to be exhibiting, who's going to be there, who's sponsoring. That's another huge clue, because not only can it show you who what the audience will be like, but it will also give you an idea of, are these vendors potential prospects for me. And then you mentioned size, right? So factor that in. I couldn't agree more. I've been in the past couple of years to some conferences that are the same size, 5,000-6,000 people. And it was touted as like, man, you couldn't come to a better conference. Look at the number of people. But you start getting diminishing returns very, very quickly once you start going above 1,500, 2,000 people, because it's just overwhelming. I mean, honestly, is 5,000 better? Five times better than 1,000? No, it's actually worse. Just too many. It's hard, and you could do some pre-planning, to make sure you connect with the right people there. You have their information. In fact, I was going to ask you about that. What kind of pre-planning did you do that ensured that you connected with the right people there while you were at the conference?
I admit I didn't do a whole lot. I knew that there were a couple of people who would be there that I really wanted to connect with. One was a client of mine who lives in New Zealand, and I had never met, even though we worked together for 3 years. So I knew I wanted to connect with him. Another was a prospect who reached out to me back in January, but sort of fell off the face of the earth. And I knew he would be there because he was one of the speakers. Another speaker that I wanted to connect with was the business partner of someone I've been talking to about writing a book with for 2.5 years. I knew I needed to connect with her. So that was kind of what I looked at, you know, just those three people, and the rest was just serendipity.
So yeah, you can actually help that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Reached out to them beforehand. The guy who fell off the face of the earth, I sent him an email and said that with the subject line, can I buy you a beer at this conference? And while I didn't get a response from him, his head that I was going to be
there. Hey, Liz, we're losing you. Looks like you've got a connection going in and out. I don't know if you can hear me.
I can just kind of hear you.
Yeah, there you're back. You're back.
Okay. Yeah.
So you didn't get a response, you know, about the, hey, can I buy you a beer while we're there, but you connected there at the conference. Did he remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, it was kind of funny. At the first day was the first part of the conference was breakfast, and I walked in and found an empty seat and sat down, and oh my God, there he is across the table from me. yeah, which was great. You know, and you just never know. You know, I bumped into another guy whose website I had written through another client, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're in the right crowd, right? You're with your people there, and it sounds like you did a really good job of selecting a prospect-rich audience. And I like then, I would add this pre-planning element to the mix, which is the, you know, you don't have to go crazy. You did reach out to some people, including clients. I have found that just doing a little bit of pre-planning that way, just, hey, I'm going to be there, you know, in next month. I would love to connect with you. Would love to buy you a beer or a cup of coffee or whatever. Just doing that with a handful of people, it increases the probability of greater serendipity. There have been several instances where just making sure to connect, it gives me an excuse when they respond. And when they say, yeah, that'd be great, I never leave it at that. What I do is I reply saying, fantastic. Hey, let's trade cell phones so we can text each other while we're there, because, you know, it's going to be a big crowd, even 1,500 people. Now I have their cell phone, the cell phone of three or four people I definitely want to connect with. The cool thing is, just by doing that and then connecting with those while I was there, one or two of those people will typically introduce me to others. You know, so we've already connected a couple of times there physically. We've finally met, even if it's a speaker. And it's like, hey, Ed, do you know you know, Cindy? And a lot of times, that's where the real serendipity happens. It's just through completely unintended, through one of those contacts that I purposely planned on connecting while I was there.
Yeah. That's absolutely how it worked. One of my connections, this woman from Australia, I wanted to connect with. It turns out that she knows everybody on earth in my world. And so every time I was near her, she introduced me to half a dozen people around her, which was just amazing.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Good stuff, Liz. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. And, you know, a big plus for me of you having done this is you and I got a chance to have dinner last week while you were here.
Yeah.
The conference happened to be in Atlanta.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was really, yeah.
Super. Well, thanks for sharing that experience with us. This is, I get asked all the time, hey, you know, is it worth going to a conference? And, you know, you and I are talking over dinner about the fact that, you know, now that you're on your own, conferences take a completely different meaning. Many times we go to conferences on our employer's dime, but now that you're on your own, we're talking, you know, it could easily be a $2,000, $3,000 investment. That's, you know, that's significant. So is it worth it, and how can you make it worth it? And you've just given us a great template here, if you will. So thank you.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome very much. And hope you're having a cool and not too humid day there in Atlanta.
You get out of here just in time. That's all I got to say.
Good thing.
All right, Liz. Thank you for that. I want to, let's see, Leslie had typed in a question. She said, in the same vein, I joined the American Council of Engineering Companies in Wisconsin and joined the PR committee. I already attended one meeting. I took your advice and got involved. Oh, awesome, Leslie. Good job. She says, I'll get to know marketing people from different engineering companies and can attend conferences. The architectural engineering construction industry is my focus. I think this membership will be worth it. Any comments? Well, I think very smart of you to not just get involved by volunteering, but making sure that you only do that with an association that is prospect rich, that's very targeted toward your target audience, right? That is very focused on your target audience, because that's when it makes sense to do that. You know, you don't want to get involved for the sake of getting involved in something. You want to get involved somewhere where it's really going to make a difference. In terms of comments or suggestions, I think you're be as helpful as possible. I think a lot of this is about heart. It's got to come from the right place. So when you volunteer, do it from the heart, not as a kind of an anxious energy of like, oh my gosh, this has got to pay off like as quickly as possible. I got to land some business from this. If you do it because you really sincerely want to help, then the right situations will materialize. So you'll get the benefit. The second thing I would say is, since you're already in the PR committee, one of the great ways to volunteer is to help put together some of the events. Sometimes in those committees, that's kind of what's expected of committee members. But just in case, I don't wait for somebody to ask you. Go to whoever's chairing that committee and say, how can I help? Can I help you put together some of the events? Can I help you, you know, write some of the copy to promote it? Offer some ideas. Some of the best benefits I got from this was helping them put together two or three of the monthly events in any given year, because that really gave me permission to roll up my sleeves and to contact people and interact with other committee members, as well as reaching out to vice presidents of marketing, directors of marketing in different companies who were in my target market. And now I had authority. I had a reason to contact these people, not because I was soliciting their business, but I wanted to see if they were interested in being a panelist or a speaker. And once you coordinate with them and you start developing a relationship, you have at least a little bit of rapport, and you've opened up some dialogue. And many times, just by the fact that you, in your email signature, you have the description of what it is you do and for whom, it's inevitable. Some of these contacts will just ask you, hey, listen, I noticed that this, you know, you do, you write white papers for tech companies. That we may actually need somebody like that. Can you tell me more about who you work with, or can you give me, you know, some idea of your pricing or whatever? And so you get in these situations where it's almost inevitable and it happens. But don't wait. I would say just take charge and ask how you can get involved and how you can help and add value. And keep us posted, Leslie. That's fantastic. Way to go. Okay, let's see. Got a caller with a Michigan number. I think this is Nancy. Nancy, is that you?
Yes. Can you hear me? No.
Yeah, how are you?
You can?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Oh, great. I'm going to turn down my
speaker. How's it going?
Good. Let me know if I need to turn down my speaker. But my niche is medical device manufacturing. I'm sorry about that, my dog. And I personally haven't gotten real far with my prospecting, which is my own fault. I feel like you're speaking to me when you send out your messages about like overanalyzing and things like that. But my question involves adding something new to my niche. I am related to, I think, one of the top experts in AI, and I have a lot of information from him about AI and healthcare, which I am trying to educate myself about. I think that's such a cutting-edge topic that I would definitely like to add that to my writing abilities. I was going to say, do you recommend adding it to my website as like another component?
Yeah, I don't think it can hurt. However, I wouldn't count on this to change your situation. So let me explain what I mean. So give me an idea, like where are you right now in your business? I mean, are you working with clients already or are you just kind of starting that effort?
Well, I'm working with clients, but they're not in my niche. I've gotten some clients that I know, people that I know that needed some copywriting work.
Okay.
So I feel like I'm very behind on my prospecting, and right now I'm in the middle of moving. So I've had to keep pushing things back, but I'm completely confident that it's going to work out once I get going.
Okay. So that's good. So here's what I would suggest is that adding the fact that you have an expertise in AI and healthcare is not going to change your situation in and of itself, okay? What's going to change your situation is once you move and get settled is going to be doing the steady prospecting and very focused prospecting. Everything else is really it's window dressing. So because, you know, your prospects aren't necessarily going, oh, man, she's got that. You know, we should contact her. That's not going to happen. So what I would say is just focus on that, get to a place where you can now, once you move, once you're settled, usually before you feel ready, because, you know, I've been in situations like yours where, well, I got to wait until this happens, or I got to wait till we get our furniture, or I got to wait till, you know, the first of the month, or before I know it, I've made all kinds of excuses, and I'm not saying this is you, but I've fallen into this trap, and
six months have gone by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to give yourself a deadline. There's nothing like a deadline to get you moving, and at that point, just start knocking on doors. Now, what I would do, rather than, and you could add it to your website, but I would not restructure my positioning right now to go narrower. So if your focus right now is medical device companies, I wouldn't say forget that. I'm going to go narrower and focus on artificial intelligence companies in the healthcare space. That is too narrow right now for you because you don't know. Right now, you don't, unless you have very specific expertise, you came from that side of the business, you have a lot of contacts and a great network there, I think that's too narrow. Instead, keep it a little broader, for instance, medical devices, and then you could, from a prospecting perspective, you can start focusing your initial effort on going after AI companies that focus in the healthcare space. You see what I'm saying? So from a prospecting standpoint, you can get very surgical, very detailed, very narrow. But from a positioning standpoint, keep it broader because you don't want to necessarily go too narrow at first and then have to pull back because it was way too narrow.
Right. I do feel like a lot of just regular healthcare companies will be embracing AI. So eventually it seems like everyone will be talking about it, will need to communicate about it. But I don't think we're there yet.
Sure. Sure, and you could even say I work with healthcare companies with a strong specialty, and I have a strong specialty in AI, healthcare AI. So you can say that, but don't say, oh no, all I do is this, because that's narrowing down your field a little bit too much at the stage of the game.
Right. Okay, that sounds good. Or maybe when I'm like nurturing, I could send them something. Say something, and like if I know their company uses AI, I could send them an article or something, calling out the fact that I am interested. I write about that.
Well, with nurturing, it should be more informative, interesting information about that topic. Not so much, just checking in with you. Want to let you know that I write about this. No, instead you want to say, hey, I came across Kim. I came across this article about, this particular topic in AI. I thought you'd find it interesting. Hope everything's going well. Regards,
yeah.
Nancy.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you can even preface it
by saying, hey, I'm the copywriter that you connected with a couple of months ago, just to refresh your memory. But, yeah.
Okay. And just the fact that I am sending it lets them know that it's an interest without me having to state it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more powerful that way because you're not asking for anything. You're giving something.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, but the best thing, most important thing, Nancy, is just set a deadline. This is by this date. On this date, I'm going to start prospecting regularly every day.
Okay. I will do that. Yes, I have to do that. I almost wish someone else would just give me a deadline.
Well, okay. I could give one to you, but I don't know, when you're moving. But if you're having trouble even with that, just say, okay, if Ed was here, what, and you could see my calendar, what would he say? Like, which date would he give me?
Or get it in time for the next call, next month's call.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Cool. So make a commitment, to be here in the July call and let us know that you've started and when you started and even how many warm emails you sent out.
Okay. I'll do that.
All right. I'm going to hunt you down.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I shouldn't do that. But,
good luck
okay,
with the move, Nancy.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Nothing like making a public declaration to make you feel more accountable. I strongly recommend that. I've found that you don't even need to do it with a colleague. You could do it with anybody, even a friend, a family member, someone who could say you turn to and say, "Look, I'm making a commitment to do X by this date. I need you to hold me accountable. Could you set an alert in your phone and follow up with me on that date and make sure that I've gotten it done?" I mean, that is a very powerful thing. We can even do it on Facebook, social media. Hey, I'm publicly declaring that I'm going to do this. I encourage you guys to hold me accountable, check in on me. Really, really powerful. It's scary, but you'll get it done. Nobody wants to feel that nobody wants to be shamed that they get it done. All right, let's see. We got Kimberly. Kimberly, how are you?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been able to attend one of these calls.
Yeah, no worries. Good to have you here.
So first, I just wanted to second both the attending trade shows and getting an accountability partner. I attended a trade show back in March and got two clients out of it within like 2 months, and I'm about
wow.
to re-message all of the people I met there again to see how they're doing, because quite a lot of people were like, you know, we could really use someone like you, but I've got a bunch of things to finish first, which is, you know, a very common answer. But, you know, you get a stack of cards and you have permission to reach back out to them, especially if you follow up with them immediately after the conference. And then you're like, hey, just wanted to say thanks for talking to me or whatever. You know, if they respond to you, if they say something like, yeah, let's connect, but later, then it's still okay for you to keep contacting them. And that's a really big thing, because the conference was actually in Europe. So everyone was freaking out about GDPR and like having permission, but people are like, yeah, let's connect later. Then obviously you have permission to keep contacting them, which is always good.
Awesome.
And also the accountability, I had an accountability partner for over a year, I think. And I achieved so much more in that year than I had in the year previously. And then my accountability partner had to stop doing it for their own reasons. And I realized this year that I was not being nearly as productive as I could be, because I just didn't have anyone to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. Or you declare it to yourself that this is what you're going to do, but then you don't actually do it, because you can just keep telling yourself, oh, well, I'll just do it later. So I went and I got another one. And this is only day three, but already it's making a huge difference, because right now I'm in a really weird position of basically waiting on all of my open projects, waiting for feedback. Like, I have nothing to actively do for my clients right now. So I'm working a lot on my own business and defining stuff and getting things in place so that when I do get that next call, I have the proposal templates made and everything. But when I don't have the specific tasks for my clients, it's a lot harder to motivate me myself to be like, all right, now you have all these things to do to fill your full work day. And also, of course, prospecting. So my question actually is, one of the things I really want to do is start reaching out again to my LinkedIn contacts. I've heard a lot of people say that LinkedIn is really great. And, you know, it's never really been a source of leads for me. But I do have a network of like 600 people. But some of them I haven't connected with or heard from for years. So do you have any, I don't know about templates, but like how you can approach it where you let people know what you're doing now, but also kind of inviting them to tell you more about their business?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, so I agree with you. LinkedIn is, I think, the biggest untapped opportunity for many creative professionals. And the good news is that most people are doing it wrong. And I say that's good news because it can help you stand out when you do it right. Kind of like with warm email prospecting, right? Most people are doing that wrong. So when you do it the way that I teach you guys, it really stands out. Maybe not every week, but every couple of weeks I get a random email from somebody who's using that system and saying, Ed, I got an email. I landed a client through warm email prospecting, and they said that they've never seen an email like that, or they rarely get an email like that, and they always delete them, but mine was so different. Something along those lines. So it's, to me, so much of it is about standing out. So that is context for what I'm about to suggest. Most people, when they're reaching out to the network on LinkedIn, they're sending a very generic message. Mm-hmm. Or it's a message, statement, or question that they would never use in real life, like in person. Right? Have you noticed that? It's like you read it and you go, man, would you ever come to someone, like approach someone and ask them that or say this or say it that way? You know what I'm saying, Kim? It's like, mm-hmm. this is so awkward and so templated. And so the right approach is to act like a real human. And real humans, when you think about, when you dissect a conversation, there's a certain flow to them. And they usually start with really short questions. I love asking questions because questions beg to be answered. When you ask a question, you kind of create tension in your message. And that tension needs to be resolved when the other person gets it. It's like a hot potato. So one thing you could do, this is what I would suggest. Find, just like with a warm email, find a meaningful connection. In other words, something very personalized and relevant to that person only. And then ask a question, which is how you end a warm email, right? So you're taking the top element of the warm email and the bottom element, kind of like the bookends, and you're using that in a private message in LinkedIn. So I'll give you an example. You go to Jim Smith's profile, and you look to see first, like, what he's posted recently and find something. This shouldn't take you too long because you're already kind of used to this with warm emailing, but find something. What it is not as important as the fact that you want to show that you've done your homework, that you're paying attention. And let's say that he just came back from, since we're on conference topic, we're in the conference mode, let's just say that he was posting that he was at this, you know, so-and-so conference. So you start with that. Hey, Jim, been a while since you connected. I saw that you came back from that conference. You know, exciting. I hope it was worthwhile for you. How's business? Kim, right? So the question is up to you, but it should feel like that's a question I would ask you, Kim, because I know that what you do is part of your function is business development, right? Is prospecting, it's getting clients. So what would be the equivalent question for Jim? You'll have to decide based on, you know, who they are, but that question will probably almost be the same for most everybody you contact. The statement above it will be different based on something you picked from their news feed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So basically, though, what you're saying is, even though these are people you've connected with, because it's been such a long time since you've actually, like, had a conversation or had a connection or whatever on LinkedIn, that you kind of approach it as somebody who may not know you or may not remember you, so you don't really mention anything about yourself. You just invite them to talk about what they're up to.
Yeah, and you could preface it with a quick statement like, hey, Jim, you know, Kim here, we connected a few months ago because of X. Like, if you remember, then I think it's okay to add that, to preface your note with something really quick, but mm-hmm. not like three or four sentences of, here's what I do, and just in case you don't remember, you know, none of that. Just really quick, if you feel it needs to be prefaced, then what you noticed about them or what they're doing, something recent, and then a question that builds that tension at the end.
Okay.
And what you'll find, now, here we go, I mean, like just like with anything, right, don't expect 100% response rate. Right? But I have found, I've been experimenting with this the past few months, I found that the response rate is much higher than a warm email for two reasons. First of all, there's a connection there. Like you guys are connected on LinkedIn. And second of all, the just kind of the nature of that interaction really lends itself to something like a, you know, like a 20% response rate in many cases. Because you're not asking for anything. The middle part of the warm email message that you would normally use in a warm email is not there.
Right.
You're just trying to start a conversation. Now, the attitude you need to take is, that's fine. I'm looking to see who's willing to engage in some conversation here, who's willing to start a dialogue with me. Mm-hmm. I used to stress about the fact, like, oh, man, 20% answered, but 80% didn't. You know what? As you know, it's all about timing. Don't let it bother you. Just focus on the ones who are willing to engage. And then, hey, thanks for asking, Kim. Great to hear from you. Yeah, business is good. You know, this is happening, that's happening, and whatever. And then you should – then you just act like a human. How would you reply to that? It's like, hey, that's great, Jim. Great to hear from you. Hey, that sounds like exciting work. At that point, it might make sense, depending on what they say, to reply with something to the effect of, hey, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I – help companies that sell into the travel industry, you know, do X, Y, and Z. Do you need help in that area? It might be too soon. It depends on what they responded with, but that's where you're trying to go. You see what I'm saying? So that might be two mm-hmm. steps down the line, but you're trying to play it like you would a chess master. You know how in chess you're always thinking three or four moves ahead, and so. Think of it that way. That's where you kind of want the conversation to go. You're not going to force it. You're going to create the environment where that kind of conversation can take place. If it doesn't, everything's fine, they got their bases covered, then that's fine. You don't go there. But if you start feeling like, you know what, there might be an opportunity here, let me just throw this out there and see what he says, then throw it out there. And if the answer is, you know, thanks, you know, definitely keep you in mind, I think we're all set for now, but I appreciate the offer, then that's fine. Just leave it there. But you know what? At that point, I would probably make a note of that person outside of LinkedIn and put them in my nurturing bucket. That way you can stay in touch and make sure that there is some follow-up, some nurturing.
And do you find, in terms of nurturing, that LinkedIn is a good option? Because one of the things that's always kind of put me off of it is, you know, if I've sent somebody a couple of messages and never received the answer or never received any answer, or if I have received an answer, but then every message I've sent after that first answer has not been responded to, LinkedIn's like a chat. So everything previous is still there. As opposed to like an email. So if somebody says, yeah, I think we're great for now, like, is it okay to say, great, I don't get to spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. Could I have your email address or could I put you on my newsletter or something?
You know, I don't know. I don't like that just because you're trying to force that situation. I mean, unless it's someone you already have a really good relationship with, but my advice at that point, because the relationship is not quite there, would be to at least start the nurturing, continue the nurturing there on LinkedIn, maybe at least one or two attempts. And if you're right, if then that there's no response there, you know, I think it's okay to try something like, you know what, I'm going to see if I can get their email address and then try to re-spark this conversation through email. But, yeah, it would be awkward to send 3, 4, 5 nurturing messages over the course of a year, and there's this whole history of them never responding. It just
right.
Feels like you're bumping up against a wall.
Right, and also it just seems very strange where it's like, you know that I don't spend a lot of time on LinkedIn because I don't have time. to spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. So I know that a lot of people don't necessarily spend a lot of their time on LinkedIn. And as you said, it's a timing issue. They have to see if they've gotten the message or not. So I prefer to then take it to email, but only if it's like, we actually got an answer and yes, somebody wants to keep hearing from me.
Yeah. So I don't think this is as big a challenge as it sounds, just because when you think about it, only a certain percentage of people are going to respond, are going to go that far into a conversation, and then we'll end up on the other end where they need nurturing, right? So out of 650, which, by the way, would take you a long time to kind of contact, right? So this is not something you're going to do next week.
No, I have like a goal of 5 a day.
Yeah, so 5 a day, and even that, you know, is, it's going to take some time, right? Because you're going to do it right. It's not a copy and paste job. At the other end, after a few months, only a certain number of people are going to come out on the nurturing side of things. So this is really not a ton of people, number one. And number two, at that point, you know, you can decide, hey, you know, there was only 10 people. And I think it's worth, out of those, 7 of those are worth nurturing. Let me do the research and try to find their email address, something along those lines. You see what I'm saying? So it's not, this is not, I think, the challenge it sounds like. Number one, by the way, I totally agree with you that most people are not on LinkedIn all the time like they are in other platforms. I saw a stat the other day, something like 85% of LinkedIn users only log in once every 8 to 30 days or something like that. It was kind of a wide range, but the point they were trying to make is, and like Facebook, where most people, I haven't seen the stats for this, but I know for a fact that most people are logging in at least, you know, a few times a week.
Mm-hmm.
With LinkedIn, it's not the case.
Yes.
All you're trying to do is you're not trying to find a silver bullet. I think you're with LinkedIn. What you're trying to do is you're trying to see if you can start, kickstart some dialogue with mm-hmm. your contacts. And you're doing it in a way that's more natural. And then see where you can take that conversation with the ones who do respond.
Yeah, thank you very much. That makes a lot of sense.
Cool. Absolutely. Hey, and you know what? Let us know, Kim, if once you get that started, if you start seeing some patterns or some wins or things that weren't working or working really well, would love to hear from you. Yeah. I you know, and that's something I've seen several people do this. I've started, like I said, using this approach in LinkedIn over the past few months. It's been very, very fruitful. The other thing, by the way, for you, Kim, and for everybody else, if you haven't checked out my podcast episode with Steve Maurer on how he uses LinkedIn, check it out. It's episode 131. So b2blauncher.com/episode131. The one thing that he also does that we didn't talk about here today is he is really big at looking at each of those prospects' LinkedIn pages to see if they have a LinkedIn page, and then posting a comment to, you know, something that he found on one of the LinkedIn pages. And of course, it's got to be done sincerely and authentically. I think you guys have real good common sense with that, but I think it's important to mention that. And the response rate he gets is pretty high in terms of engaging with whoever's running their LinkedIn page. Because I think for a couple of reasons. One is not a lot of people are doing that on LinkedIn. It's not like many other platforms when it comes to company pages. And number two, it's very common for them to see, okay, well, who commented, and let me look at their profile. And now it's usually somebody in marketing. And many times what he gets is not just a comment or reply to his comment on that company's page, but an invitation to connect, and then a private message that says something to the effect of, hey, I see what you're doing, the type of work you do. We might want to connect with you because we do have some writing projects that we could use some outside help with, something along those lines. So it's very what would be the word? He's just very low key. He's just putting himself out there in a very genuine, authentic way. And because of the nature of the platform, he's the one they're contacting, as opposed to him having to go and knock on that specific door and pitch his services. So definitely something to check out. Again, episode 131, some really, really good stuff there. He's had some great, great success. All right, so star two, if you got a question, want to talk through an issue. I don't see any raised hands, by the way. So if you've raised it, I miss. Oh, here we go. I got two. I got Nathan and Robin. So let's see. Nathan, you are on. How's it going?
Hey, Ed. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good, man. Good to hear from you.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here again.
So what's cooking?
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I got two separate things on my mind. I don't know how you want to handle that. If you want to just do the first one and then go back and then come back to me if you still got time, however that works. But
yeah, well, let's take one at a time.
Okay. All right. So the first thing is let me just give you a quick update on where we're at since you've been helping me through. Like building, I've been, you know, doing the local art classes in my community, and so going way back, I was doing some warm email prospecting, trying to connect with some like school administrators to see if I could get this thing into some of the public schools in my area, and as I was doing that, it's like I got so close with a couple of them, And then there was staff turnover, and like my contact would get fired, and then another one where I actually had an hour and a half meeting because of a warm email that I sent to this guy, and met with me and said, I'm going to talk to the art teacher, I'm going to do this, I'm going to, you know, present it at our local admin meeting, and then just never got anything back. It just kind of died. And then I found out, well, there's some really nasty things going on in that school right now, and so that's probably why you didn't hear back. I'm like going, oh, great, you know. So it's and so I got tired of waiting for these schools, and somebody in our community, like when I was on, called in maybe two calls 2 months ago, something like that, or I don't know, back in February, I think, and one of our members suggested, check out the local library. You know, it's like that would be a good resource. You can, you know, use their facility to host a class there. And so after that, I launched one in March that was like my first one. Had 10 students, and we finished that one up middle of May. And then I'm right now just started a summer program, and I got two classes happening simultaneously. We're in the second week right now of a 5-week class that I'm doing, and I've got 10 students in each of those classes. My goal was to get 25 in each, as part of my experimenting, I ran an Instagram ad because so many of my targets, since they're teenagers, they hang out on Instagram like hours. And I got hundreds of hits to my registration page through there. And I also did Facebook, and I got a whole bunch of hits. So probably 200-300 hits to my registration page. And I was only targeting just my city, you know, but I lost most of those because they came and they checked it out and they didn't come back. So I've closed the registration. And I still get hits because another thing I did was I put flyers at Starbucks and all these different places around town, and I still get hits to that registration page. Something you told me to do was to stick up a little opt-in on your site that just said, hey, you know, it's like if you want to get in on the loop to know when classes are happening, you know, leave your email address. I'll keep you in the loop. And so I did that. And I noticed I've got probably 3 signups in the past week that just happened through that. And so I guess my question is, what would be the next logical step to going forward and just continuing to build this?
Well, a lot of different things you could do to promote. So, I mean, it's kind of I would keep doing what's been working, right? And then it seems like the building up your wait list should be kind of one of the top things. When are you looking to open up another group or another registration period? How much more time will that happen?
My next one will be September 10th. And, I mean, I would – if I had this going the way I wanted it, I would have something going, you know, around the calendar year, but I'm limited to the library will let me. We've got our Pikes Peak Library District has about 15 different branches, and some of them don't have a big enough room, but several of them do. And I'm allowed to use one of those 12 times in a 6-month period. And so
no,
I
that's
have
fine.
To
I mean,
go
I,
from, yeah.
Library I, we don't need to get into the logistical details. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, like when your next registration window opportunity is going to be. So if it's going to be September, the good news is you got time to build up pent-up demand. And I think there are a couple of things. I know we talked about at one point referrals. I think this is the kind of thing where, you know, you want to try to capture referrals as much as possible from happy, you know, people. And I would just overtly ask, you know, I would start planting that seed, early on. And, but you definitely want to ask, and it needs to be kind of a process where as part of the exit process, you know, you're asking for feedback and letting them know that you depend a lot on referrals, that, you know, your business,
okay.
And you're happy, and if you know, you know, ask for one person. Do you know someone, one person who you think, you know, one kid, one parent who would love to take part in this experience? You know, and if so, would you mind, you know, sharing this with them? And if you can, with referrals, one cool way that you could do this, by the way, is instead of saying, would you mind, you know, pointing to my page, or would you mind if I contacted them, both of which can work, but if you have something you can give them, hey, would you mind letting me know, I will give you something to give to them, you know, some gift. Something like, I don't know, you'd have to brainstorm some ideas, but something tangible, like some sort of cheat sheet, some sort of really cool thing that's like easy for you to produce, doesn't cost much, and they could give it to them. You know, like the ideal thing would be a book, but, you know, in this case, that wouldn't be appropriate. So see if you can come up with something like that, because it's unique, it's different. You know, there's this company here that they spray, in fact, they were just here today, they spray for mosquitoes in the yard, and they give you a hang tag, and they say, look, you know, if you love being mosquito-free, you know, would you mind giving this hang tag to a neighbor who you think, you know, might want the same kind of situation in their backyard because they got small children or whatever, or they enjoy being outside. And so they've made it really easy. They've given me something tangible. You see what I'm saying? And it's a hang tag, and I think it's got like it's basically an offer for a free application. You know, no strings, just like, hey, it's a free application, and they'll come in and do it. There's no cost to you. So that kind of situation, you just need to figure out, okay, what would be the equivalent for you? Something where they get something really cool, like, you know, like, hey, how to do this, or here's how to put together this video or put together this art project, you know, step by step by step. So I think the referral thing is going to be key, because word of mouth is so powerful for that kind of thing. And in the cost to you of marketing and selling, you know, is super low when you do it that way. The other thing, I like the idea of the Instagram and Facebook, and I think we talked about this last time, but you know, you really need to know what you're doing there, because you can end up spending a lot of money, right? And like you've already experienced, you've lost a lot of these leads. So there's a way that you can set it up to retarget visitors to your website. So they saw the ad, they click through, they ended up on your website, but you never were able to capture their contact information. Which is fine.
Right.
That's going to be very common in any direct response situation. All right, you can retarget those people with a different ad to get them to, you know, download something. And at that point, the download, of course, will require an opt-in, and that way you capture their information. And retargeting is really cost-effective.
Okay.
You know, so that's
is that like
a
remarketing ad? Is that what it's called? Or
exactly that. Yeah. They will see it on their Facebook feed. You know, so it's very low key. It's from an action they took. They don't even realize it.
Okay, that's a good idea, because that did cost that did cost more than I was hoping it would, And I did get one registration straight from Facebook and one straight from Instagram. And I'm like, okay, so I got one out of them. And they were very expensive signups, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. The other thing, and I'm wondering is, and this will require some brainstorming, but where else do these people hang out? So, you know, are there complementary businesses to yours that, you know, they cater to the same crowd, and you know, you'd be able to kind of piggyback on their audience or kind of where they go. So one example would be, and this is, you got to understand, so this is not like my area of expertise, but I'm just thinking, if it were me, you know, what would I brainstorm? What kind of ideas? And one that came to mind is, here we have these art centers. They're community art centers where it's funded by the county, and they have, it's a building, and there's like a, they do pottery there, they do art classes, they do, so it's like a, you know, they got these studios in there, and they put together these classes, and because it's county run, I think there's like a bulletin board there where, you know, you could maybe ask permission to put up a flyer, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm also thinking, is I'm brainstorming here with you, well, what about the who are the instructors in those places? You know, like I met one, an art instructor who teaches there because she used to be, her kid used to go to my youngest school. So we met them. So, you know, that would be a great person to say, hey, listen, I do this, and I know you teach, you know, pottery over there. Who do you know, your students who might be interested in something like this? I'm looking to fill this class. And so getting referrals from those types of people because they're exposed to, right?
Okay, that's good.
But I think the biggest thing out of all that could be like this really nice flywheel of business is the referral system, referral process. If you can figure that out, then that keeps feeding you business on a regular basis.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I've got this like 10-step thing that I still haven't created into an opt-in yet, but I was thinking I could print, I could do like a low cost sort of print version of it and have my kids, hey, you know, this would be like a great thing for somebody who's interested in this, and it gives them tips on like free software that they could get where they could start drawing on their computers and that kind of thing.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Test it. You know, I think all these are, don't try to cram too much into one giveaway. Make each its own separate giveaway.
Yeah.
And see where are you getting traction.
Right. Okay. Okay, that's good. All right. I mean, I did get, I was able to work with the local YMCA. There's a lot of youth that goes through there, and most of them were allowed me to put my flyers up. You know, and we're happy to do that. And I don't know what became of it. I don't know if they were part of the hits. I could imagine that they were part of the hits, but I don't know that I got registrations through that. You know, I did. Okay.
Well, I mean, I think you got some good stuff here, and you don't know which one will give you the best multiplier effect, but until you try them, right? So you just got to test some of these things. And I would do them simultaneously. I wouldn't do one at a time. I would just throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
Just do it all. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
That's good. I mean, I did on my on the page registration, I have a little thing that says, you know, how did you hear about this class? And so I mean, the amazing thing is that most of my signups are repeats or, you know, people that know me through when I was teaching and that kind of thing. It makes me realize that that new ones, it's such a relational thing, right? You know, gosh, I mean, would you say something about, I'm thinking of like how I came to, discover you and you stick so much stuff out there. I mean, you got so much like good content, and it made me feel like you're somebody who's safe, who knows, what they're talking about, you know, and I feel like it's similar, but like getting into creating that kind of content and stuff is it looks overwhelming to me, you know. It's like, where do you start?
Well, but keep in mind that it's you know, it's a function of longevity, you know, how long I've been out there. Obviously, I didn't create all that overnight.
Right.
This will be my 10th year doing this, you know. So over the course of 10 years, I've created a lot of free, valuable content, which, you know, a lot of times I can repurpose. So it looks like there's more out there sometimes, but it's really, you know, either the same in different formats or in different platforms, or it's repackaged or repurposed in some way,
mm-hmm.
or then refined, updated. But yeah, it looks like, you know, you're everywhere, but it just it doesn't take as much as you think. It's really just being very strategic about where you show up. You know, in your case, will be the good news is you don't have to have. I have to really cast a wide net because my audience is international. In your case, you just need to stick with your, you know, in your local area. So it's really finding out, you know, where do these people hang out? What do they have in common? I think if you start with that in terms of what they do, where they hang out and all that, that could give you more ideas as to, you know, where you could put yourself or your information.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's really good. All right. Well, thank you for that. So for my other question, do you want to come back to me, or do you want to hear it?
Yeah,
now?
let me do this, Nathan. I got Robin with her hand raised, so
it.
let me go to Robin.
Got it.
And I'll come back to you, and we can go through that. Cool.
Sounds good. Okay, great.
All right. Let's see, Robin, you are on. How's it going?
Great. And you, Ed?
Doing well. Good to hear your voice.
Same here. So I'm going to start just by thirding the options, the what everybody else was talking about for going to conferences.
Uh-huh.
Because, as you know, I go to like 3 or 4 of them a year.
Yeah, you're a pro at this.
Well, sort of. So that brings me to my question I have for today. And I guess it's not really a question, but it's something that happened, and I just want to walk through it with you
okay.
to see maybe how I could have handled it better or handle it in the future.
Okay.
And I know that I hear in my head all the time you keep saying you can't close what's not closable. So we'll start with that. So I met this guy at a conference 1.5 years ago, and we were talking, and his title is he's the chief sales officer for this big maritime company. Well, they're not so big, but they're big, okay? And I was talking to them in the booth, and I was talking to one of the other guys in there, and he had mentioned white papers. And so this guy said that he wasn't ready for them yet, but here it is now 1.5 years later, and he sent me an email late at night and said that he was finally looking to get a white paper done over the next couple of months. So we talked over the phone, and the first thing he said to me was he was price shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said that I was the only one he was talking to that actually had the qualifications for the industry and that knew the words that he needed without having anybody looking them up. So that was good. I thought that was good, but I was still concerned about him saying that he was price shopping.
Yeah.
Especially when he's in sales. So that made me a little nervous. And his product is a very expensive product to be put on ships. And he was telling me he was having a hard time finding someone. He wanted someone in the Navy to actually interview for his white paper, and he was having a real hard time finding somebody to say yes. So we talked a little bit about that, and I also told him that I had some contacts that I could actually probably get somebody. And so he thought that was good. And then I talked to him about doing a white paper plan first, and I told him how much that would cost. And then I gave him a range, because I told him that until we did the white paper plan, I really couldn't tell him how much the white paper was going to cost. And he had sent me a video, and he wanted his document, he wanted his white paper based on the video, but there really wasn't a lot of stuff in that video. So I knew it was going to take a lot, especially knowing the product. And like I said, it's very expensive. So I gave him, that was the beginning of May. Memorial Day weekend, I got an email from him saying that he forgot what the prices were that I gave him. So I went through the thing again. And I told him I was around over the weekend actually doing some work. And so I was here to talk if he wanted to, you know, discuss it further over the phone. So he just sent an email back and said to have a nice weekend and thank you. And then I got another email, like on Monday from him, that Monday, saying that I was double the price of the second runner-up. So I'm still supposedly the only one that knows his industry, and I have the connection in the Navy that he wants. So I sent him a reply back and just said, you know, I get that a lot, and my prices are right in line with other professional copywriters and all of that. And then because he's in sales and I wanted to ask him, well, what would, you know, somebody say, well, how would you respond back if somebody wanted to buy your competitor's product instead? But I didn't say that. Wasn't sure if I should have. So instead, I went with the scenario of, you know, this is sort of like, and I'm just paraphrasing now, but it was sort of like, you know, if you're going to be stuck at sea, do you want to be rescued by a dinghy, a sailboat, or the Coast Guard?
Yeah.
So that was based on your scenario of McDonald's and whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I strongly suggest that, you know, we just go ahead and do the white paper plan. And then if you still feel that you want somebody else to write it for a cheaper price, you know, by all means, do that. And I've not heard back from him. So should I just follow up and say, hey, how's it going, or just ignore them?
Well, a couple of things. One is what I would have done differently earlier, just kind of an FYI, you know, for next time, a similar situation, because these things do come up. And then the other one is the, you know, what do you do from here? The one big thing, it's actually a small thing, but I think it makes a huge difference that I would have done differently, is the moment the whole price shopping thing came up, I would have stopped right there and reframed and repositioned myself. And by that I mean letting him know, and this is better if he can do it on the phone, by the way. I, you know, you mentioned this. I just want to just bring that I want to talk about that, because if this is going to be an issue, I think it's better for both of us to know that now, so we don't waste each other's time. I'm not going to be your cheapest resource for this, okay? I'll just tell you right off the bat. So if that is your number one criteria, we probably should disengage. Here's what I do bring to the table. Here's what kind of value I can bring. And I would focus on two things. I would focus on what you can bring in terms of benefit and advantages, and then I would also shine a spotlight on the risk factor, you know, how you are the the least risky option in terms of, you know, no hand-holding, already come with all this, you know, insight and information, years of experience in this industry. You know, because, and you need to highlight and kind of agitate the risk of the wrong writer getting involved and what that could cost them in terms of time, opportunity costs, wasted effort, frustration, and all those things. So I think you need to hit it from both sides. And I think that would have reframed the way he's looking at this and the way he's communicating with you. I strongly suspect that. Now, that hasn't happened yet. So at this point, you, instead of going down a different path, the conversation or the dialogue just kept going down the wrong path, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If there's a way you can still talk about that, then I would. But unfortunately, the opportunity, in a way, like the best opportunity to do that has kind of passed. And now it just feels like you're trying to reframe at an awkward moment. Like you're just trying to change the conversation at the wrong moment. So where are we right now? You know, like you've sent the proposal or the fee agreement for a white paper plan for, you know, just a few hundred dollars, right? So what did you quote him?
No, I didn't quote him. All I gave him was, the only thing he got so far from me was
the range on the white paper.
Right. And I had asked him what his budget was originally, and he didn't give it to me. And then he came back and said that my range was double of what the second runner-up was.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's another opportunity. Of course, now, had you done this earlier, that probably wouldn't have come up, but that would have been a good opportunity to say, yeah, and I'm sure it is, and in fact it should be. Here is, and you want to basically put that fee difference in context, right? It's a $2,000 difference, however, it could be a $40,000 mistake, you know.
Right, but I don't know what the difference was either. Because
no, I know.
Right.
But you know what I'm
saying.
You could do it without knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's double, you can kind of figure it out based on what you quoted. But so at this point, you know, you just need to figure out if, based on your last communication, you can do your best at reframing. At this point, I would attempt it. I mean, because at this point, what have you got to lose? You know, and then see how he reacts. And the good news is, no matter how he reacts, it's good news. It's a good thing, because he might change his tune, which is good for you, or mm-hmm. he might still, you might continue to sing the same tune, in which case, you know what, you got your answer. This guy would be a nightmare to work with, because
right.
if he can't see that, then, you know, if they're a pain now, they're going to be more of a pain later. Once they're a client.
Well, I just keep thinking about, yeah, the second runner-up was half the cost, but I don't see them being able to do a really good job with the white paper based on what the project is or what the product is.
Yeah.
Get
yeah, there's all kinds
point.
Of stories you could use, you know, with the whole, I mean, you use one, right, with the whole, yeah, sometimes, you know. Somebody who's lower doesn't mean it's cheaper. In the end, you end up spending, and let me explain why.
Mm-hmm.
When you end up spending, you know, because you need to really hit on the risk factor there. So yeah, I mean, at this point, I don't think it can hurt, but do it in a way that doesn't feel like you just thought of this. More like, you know, I just wanted to make sure that you're looking at this, or you're factoring all these other things into your decision. And I'm just going to put that there, give it some thought. I'm going to get back with you in a week just to follow up.
Okay.
Make sense?
It does. You know, I used, when I was doing database development, I had no problem telling people that I, right up front when they said they were price shopping, that I know I'm expensive or more expensive, but here's what I bring to the table. And I don't know why I've had such a hard time doing that with the writing. And I know I'm worth the money. I think it's just changing my, getting my mind over there for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who knows? I think you need to identify the triggers, maybe do some thinking about where the block is.
Mm-hmm.
I think once I know that, I'll give you one of my reasons why. You know, when I was able to do this, and still today, when I can do it very easily, and this is for me, it's not for everybody, but when I have realized that I keep making the same mistake over and over again, where I give in and I make a concession just to win the deal, and they end up being a real pain.
Right.
And when I've looked back and realized that most of those situations were a mistake, and I'm getting too old to be just working with clients that I don't enjoy, then now it's easier. I have that clarity. And now when I see those triggers, immediately I think about what I don't want and the commitment mm-hmm. that I made to myself that, you know what, life's too short. The other thing I've noticed is just putting myself in a situation where I don't necessarily need the money, or just doing whatever I need to do to tell my brain, you don't need this. You know, so sometimes I need to lie to myself. But
right.
Because the moment you feel you need it financially and you're convinced of that, you're in a position of weakness, not of strength.
Yeah, I turn down a lot for the technical writing as well, when they want me to come sit in their office. If it's not a certain price, because they only pay by the hour, and if it's not a certain price, I just turn it down.
Yeah, as you should.
So
because you've been
right.
in that situation
I think
many
it's
times,
just
right?
Marketing. Right. Lots of times, constantly. So, I mean, I turned
you've
you down
been...
last week.
Yeah, and how many times have you been in a situation where you said, yes, you know, maybe this one's different, and it wasn't, and now you have
yeah,
to live
enough.
To regret it, right?
Right. Yeah, two yeah. clients I did that with.
Yeah. So, So think about, yeah, how you can come back with that, reframe, hit on the advantages of working with you and what that's worth. With the worth part is obviously going to be more of implied. You're not going to have, like, tangible numbers. But and then the highlight the risk. You know, you want to position yourself as the highest value option in terms of what you bring to the table, in terms of, you know, the benefits and advantages, and then how you're the least risky option.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So go get them.
All right. Thanks.
All right, Robin. Take care.
You too.
All right. Good stuff. Hey, great discussions today, guys. This is good. Let me go back to Nathan. Hold on, Nathan. Let me bring you back in. All right, Nathan, you're back on. Hello. Nathan.
I'm here. Can you hear me
now? Oh, there you go. Okay, now I can hear you. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I muted myself. I. Okay. Yeah, so what was on my mind was, like, when you're dealing with the issue of, I'm dealing with, there's some services I just don't feel like doing them anymore, and I'm just trying to clarify, okay, why am I feeling that way? I've done these things for years, and I've been through several experiences with some just horrible client relationships that just ended up bad, expectations, even though I tried to clarify those up front, they still wanted some stuff that was never communicated. So I guess my question is, do you have a criteria for deciding to eliminate a service that you have been providing, and how do you make sure that you don't get crappy clients?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is just listening to myself and just being honest, right? I mean, I think a lot of it just kind of comes naturally. You know, you just wrap up a project and it's the third one of these you've done for somebody, and you're miserable. It's like, man, I hate doing these, and just like making a note of that. Okay, what is it? Another is paying attention to which projects, once you have them, you seem to be procrastinating on, either getting started or continuing to work on them. Those are clues. Procrastination, that's a clue that something is off, or that you're going about it the wrong way, I like this idea of using procrastination, what you're procrastinating on, as an indicator that there's something that you got to pay attention to. There are certain types of projects that I just cannot get into. The only thing that gets me going is that at some point I have no choice. There's a deadline, and I got to get started. I can't just cram this in 3 days. You know, it's due in 7 days. Even 7 days is a stretch. I can't keep waiting. So those are all clues. And then, you know, I think the other place where I've identified those things, both clients and projects, is just doing kind of mid-year and year-end recaps. I like to take a little bit of time to think about, and, you know, now we're nearing the end of June, right? So let's look at, we're halfway through the year. Take a few hours one day, take an afternoon if you can, and just think about, okay, let's recap the year so far. You know, in terms of clients, projects, my marketing, my fees, you know, look at some of the key areas, and that should be one of the questions you should ask yourself. As you kind of go through the list of clients you've worked with and projects you've worked on, what went well, what could have gone better? You know, and that's another opportunity there. And what you want to end up with, Nathan, I think this will just happen organically, is a list of projects that you want to do more of, projects that you want to reduce or just take out altogether. Same thing with clients, and client attributes that you need to pay attention to. Like, because you'll start seeing patterns. It's like, this is what was happening. You know, like the conversation I just had with Liz. There came a point very early on in my business when I realized, you know, clients who asked these things right away or very early in the process or at all, that is a red flag, because everyone that I've taken where this factor was an issue, or this, you know, this certain variable was there, ended up being just a nightmare or just a negative situation. And so right now here's the practical application of all this. I've given you kind of a theoretical construct to come up with kind of some ideas on how to identify these things. In terms of how do I put this in the filtering mechanism into play, there's an execution plan in the academy called How to Qualify Prospects Like a Pro, I believe it's called.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where you can then apply those factors and that framework and your findings. It's really a framework for, okay, so when I have this conversation with a prospect, I'm going to run through these particular checkpoints, and by the end, I will know if this is something I want to pursue or not. But so that is kind of the construct. The filtering itself, like what kind of questions I ask or what I'm looking for, what kind of questions am I asking myself as I listen to their answers, that comes from that assessment we just talked about. So you do that, and then you feed this framework with what you know to be true about you and your situation, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's good. Wow, okay. And maybe this is also in an execution plan, but is there like a checklist of questions that you have for yourself that can help you identify – which services that you offer, if you just can't see it yourself, that you're awesome at. You can do it the fastest with the least amount of trouble, and you make the most doing it because you're so good at it. I'm kind of having trouble identifying that right now.
I don't have that there, but here's what I would look at. I would look at one we've already talked about, which is the, you know, do I get kind of a negative energy when I think about, okay, I got to start on it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I anxious to start? Maybe neutral, or I'm really procrastinating because I don't want to even start.
Yeah,
that's one indicator. Yeah. That's one way to know. The other one you mentioned, which is how profitable is it? You know, when I look at it, and that's going to take a little bit of analysis. I'm averaging even if you charge a fixed fee, my internal hourly rate is like $43 an hour, as opposed to the other things I'm doing, which are, you know, 112, whatever. That's another big factor, right? It's so how profitable is this something I really enjoy? I want to do more of. I mean, those to me are the two biggest ones, because there's got to be joy and there's got to be profitability, and I'm willing to cases do one or the other, but when both are missing, man, that's a huge clue.
Right. Yes, it is.
You know,
okay.
I guess there's a third one, which would be it's still profitable, but is this creating a situation where my other offerings, where it's devaluing my other offerings? You know,
example of that?
Let's say that you're trying to do more strategic work in doing content planning and content strategy, for instance, with clients. And you're doing that because you've already had several clients where you've done that. It's something that you seem to not only really enjoy, but it's very profitable, and you can find that kind of work. But then you're also offering to write blog posts. I don't know. And that is, it doesn't quite jive. You know, it feels, well, that's really tactical compared to this other stuff, unless you reposition it as, well, you know, not only can we work on this, but I can actually execute the strategy for you and my team and I. You know, suddenly you've built a little bit of a team, even if it's a team of contractors, can then do the, you know, the done for you part. So I think it's, but that's really a positioning issue, not so much because you notice how I've just repositioned it so that it works.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think of a particular example where I've seen that, you know, you got to be careful. I can't think of one off the top of my head. I think that one is not necessarily as common.
Okay.
I guess the other one would be, you know, is this taking me in a direction that I feel good about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I know there have been several points in my career where I've said, I mean, let's fast forward 10 years from today. Can I see myself doing this? Or does the thought of still of doing this 10 years from today scare me or depress me? <You know?
laughs> Yeah, seriously.
Because I'm like, oh, man, I would be so depressed if I were still doing this 10 years from now. Or then that's okay, that's good. Because now I see, okay, well, obviously I'm going to have to make a change somewhere between now and then. You know, like for me, I'll give you an example. In my business, there came a point where I was asking myself, you know what, I always did a great job writing for my clients. My clients loved me. They valued my work. I love working with them, but I was not being honest with myself. I am not necessarily a writer. Writing to me was a means to an end. It was like something I did because I did it well, and it was profitable for me. But I knew there was something missing. And when I started shifting toward coaching and training, that was never a plan. It just kind of happened organically. The reason I followed that path is that felt better to me. Like this is something that I said, you know what, I really enjoy this more. And it's funny, it speaks to some of the things we talked a minute ago, that I started finding myself procrastinating with client projects, but wanting to spend more time on my writing and coaching business. I mean, training and coaching business, I should say.
Oh, wow.
So that was another
nice
clue, you know? And at one point, I did ask myself, you know, wait a minute, can I see myself still writing for clients in 10 years? And the answer was no. It's not that it's beneath me or anything like that. I would have gotten bored. Now, the answer is different for everybody. I know people who all they want to do is write, and I just so admire that. There's no right or wrong. It's just it really has to speak to you. If the thought of still writing for clients in 10 years excites you, or doing the work you do, Nathan, excites you, I think that's awesome. But in my case, I knew that every 5 years or so, I kind of like to pivot a little bit. It might not be a huge pivot, but I do enjoy doing new things and starting new things.
Wow. Okay, that's actually very helpful. Because it's like I'm enjoying more and more working on developing these teenagers, and I really, you know, I'm thinking about all the time, how can I bring them more value? How can I make it better? You know, all that sort of stuff. And then I got like these design projects that I have to do. And some of them, it's more like the more technical stuff that has to do with like setting up websites and stuff. And then it's just kind of like, there's a procrastination. Exactly what you're saying. And it's like, I remember a time in the past where some of that, I remember, you know, being more excited about it. And I'm different now, and it's great to hear you say, you know, like every 5 years you're expecting to pivot somewhat. It's like you're evolving, you're growing, and you're giving yourself permission to do that, and that feels very validating to me, you know. So it helps me understand the context of what's going on, I think. So.
Oh, good. Good. So pay attention to it and don't do anything drastic. I think the smart thing to do is once you know that, then figure out what's next for you or what you really want to spend your time and energy on, and then create a bit of a plan for transitioning, right? Because that work you mentioned that you're avoiding, that pays the bills, right? So if that pays the bills, like in my case, 6 years ago, it was 90% client work. My writing in 10% coaching and training, I couldn't afford to just say, screw that. I'm going to shut the writing business down. I have a family. I got kids to feed. I transitioned. It wasn't an overnight thing. It took me some time, but I started laying the groundwork actually in 2011, but 2012 more and more and more. And at one point I did take a chance. At one point I did jump off the cliff in a way. I had a plan, and I knew, well, I'm going to give this so many months. But just good stuff. Good stuff. You got a lot to think about.
Yeah, thank you. this is really helpful. This is really helpful. And I think I've narrowed it down. Like there's some like freelance things that I still really, I just thrive at. Like there's something about logo design that, for example, has always come easier than some of the other things. And would it make sense to niche down on the service level like that and just not do some of the other things that have just been so much harder?
I think so. Yes. Yeah. As long as you have proof, right, that this is not, I think this would work really well. If you have a track record and you already know that you like it, it can be profitable, and you know how to market that and to go after clients for that kind of work, I think it makes perfect sense to niche down. I don't like niching down too early in your business, so if you're a newbie and you're not, niching down too early is a mistake because you don't know. But in your case, I do think it makes sense to niche down.
Okay. Okay. Good to hear. Thank you.
You bet, Nathan. Yeah, great conversation. All right, guys, we're almost up 2 hours, so we're going to wrap it up. Great chat today. I love these calls. Everyone is completely different. So you never know what you're going to get in these calls, and I love the variety and the enthusiasm. Thank you for coming in today. A lot of you guys have stuck around, so hopefully that means you got some value out of it. Our next call will be, let me see, just to give you a heads up, if you want to put this in your calendar, in July. Where is the call? I think it's going to be the week of the 9th. Yes, so slated for July 10th, which is a Tuesday, 3 o'clock Eastern time. So it'll be a different time. We usually do these at 1, sometimes at 3. This one will be July 10th, 3 o'clock Eastern time. So put that on your calendar. Of course, we'll send a reminders as we get closer. And we'll put the replay up by tomorrow. Of course, we'll have a transcript of the questions asked in a few days later. So you guys have a great rest of the day, and hopefully we'll talk again real soon. Take care.